Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Coco Zing, and more. An extra-large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Hey, you want to be like me and make podcasts that everyone loves? Yeah, you do. But chances are, you don't want to spend a bunch of money doing it. No worries. A solution exists. Spotify's got a platform that lets you make podcasts super easy, then distribute those podcasts everywhere, and you can even earn money doing it. All in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Also, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. I'm speaking from experience when I say that all those additional features like video podcasts, Q&As, polls, those are things you won't find for cheap elsewhere. But with Spotify for Podcasters, it's all totally free, no catch. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. Thanks. We love you.
Everybody, welcome to Pretty Scary. I'm your host, Adam Todd Brown. Joining me as co-host this week, my favorite co-host of all, no co-host, but I do have a couple of guests. Carrie and Cindy will be back next week-ish. We got a lot of shit going on. Everyone's lives are a shambles. I have a fucking anesthesia needle embedded in my jaw. I have to have surgery. But hey, I got a couple of guests here. Case in point... Katrina Davis, shocked at the information I just delivered.
A needle? What? Right now? Can the episode be about that? Has that already been covered?
I think when I'm done dealing with it, I'll probably do an episode about it. Happened about 6 weeks ago. I went to the dentist and they were numbing my teeth. I was just there to get a crown and the needle broke inside my face.
Oh my gosh.
And I have to like go to UCLA and have actual surgery to get it out. It's a whole fucking thing.
That's insane.
And so I'm recording a bunch of episodes ahead of time to clear way for my face to be sliced open because I talk for a living and I won't be able to do that for a while.
Oh my goodness.
So, guests.
Happy to be here.
Also, Jack Kelly is here.
I can't believe you thought you could get away with just dropping that information and neither of us saying anything.
Thank you. You're just so much.
We're just gonna breeze past this thing that I have a part of a needle stuck in my face.
And like I'm gonna go straight to my handles. What?
there will be no follow up questions.
Immediate concern.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I wish I had the X-ray on my computer so I could send it.
Oh my god. To you. That's an album cover.
Oh, it is, because for some reason my jaw looks like fire. Like they had the fire filter on when they did my X-ray, and there's just a spike sitting in it.
Oh my
It's amazing. It's pretty great.
I've had a lot of dental work done, and I've never had that fear before. So thank you for now putting that fear in me.
But hey, there's people in the world who have bigger problems than me. For example, the cast of the hit Fox television show Glee.
They really do. I didn't know the extent. I knew like half of what apparently happened surrounding this show.
Yeah, I had heard rumblings and I'd heard like the big overall stories, but especially like the work conditions I had never heard about.
I sadly knew about all of it. I was deep in the fandom, all six seasons, and I was terribly aware of all of it.
Gosh.
I also did background on an episode, so firsthand knowledge of those working conditions.
I was about to say, I never thought about it, and I watched like some of the first season, I remember, but I danced when I was younger. So the idea of doing that on top of singing and acting does seem... I straight up busted my calculator out when that crew guy said that they would have like 100-hour pay stubs. And I was like, that is only sleeping and eating and working. Yeah. Like if you had a 30-minute commute tops, you would have just enough time to eat and sleep. Like that's bonkers.
And the thing is too is that like unions are pushing for good turnaround times, and like if the show doesn't take their turnarounds then they get fined, and something like that where they're making so much money they don't care. They're like, fine, we'll pay it. We don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
like we'll pay that. We'll pay them the extra money.
It becomes like something they budget in is torture.
Yep.
That's one of the things that bothers me about this documentary, because they talk about how harsh these working conditions were, and like they start getting into, well, is that maybe what drove Corey Monteith to, and we'll get into all of this in more detail in a bit, like, but, and then you're like, oh yeah, that's an interesting thought, or was it the work conditions? And then they're like, nah, Lea Michele's a bitch, that's why it happened. She probably did it because she's an asshole. And it's like, man, well, I don't doubt that she's a shit person, but it takes a really harsh tone toward her.
Not that they did a very good job of this at all, but I did take that as a factor of one more person that was at least getting paid enough to and loved the work enough that even though they were there doing the same hours, were able to just like make this decision on behalf of God knows how many other people. Physically and emotionally. Not that that wasn't because of a nepotism related relationship where they were talking about like, oh, well, if you're the bestie of the person that makes all the decisions, then you just get to be the person whose opinion matters.
Yeah.
And she just as well could have been someone that was possibly a little more balanced in what their needs and wants are as a person that isn't so work driven, that she felt better diving back into work. And all these other people were like, I'm actively crying.
I'm just wondering because I never saw a call sheet, so I don't know what their order was. And I don't know if she was one on the call sheet or if she was, you know, if that was Matt Morrison, because like in the last three seasons, he was not doing as much. But like, you know, to have her be, you know, not only like one of the stars of the show, like the like one of the top names, but also like now like the girlfriend of the person who just passed away. I think like that's the reason they were like leaning on her, because it's like, oh, well, she was the most affected by this.
And
it's
absolutely, like, absolutely, I can see that being like, if she's okay, then
yeah,
who else could possibly, you know, not be able to pull through or something like that.
I do find the assertion that she was like calculating for like her and Corey's relationship, that she was like, oh, well, if I do this and if I do this and like, you know, when, you know, I'm going to push him this way and then this will push this certain narrative about me. Like, I don't know if that's entirely true, because that's some misogynist bullshit. Like, or they were just like stars on a show and they played romantic interest. How many times have we seen that happen? But like the other one doesn't die. Like, it's
right. That's just something that happens on long-term shows all the time. Like, even they talk about Naya talking about the natural occurrence of just being like, yeah, these are the people that you're around. Like, you end up kind of, if you're attracted to each other in any kind of way, it's probably going to end up happening, kind of thing.
Yeah, there's even someone, one of the talking heads, he's talking about Lea Michele and Corey Monteith's relationship. And this motherfucker actually says, well, I think she just wanted to be around him because he was on a hit TV show. And it's like, bitch, she's the star of that hit TV show. What are you talking about? Like, that is insane.
I feel like that was another part of, like you were saying, Jack, them kind of like seeding this really weird web of, oh, well, maybe she was the friend that, you know, gave Corey faux support and kind of triggered this spiral. And that being in some way something that would benefit her in any way, that was very strange for them to kind of twist that all up into like, the one person that I almost like trusted the most their experience with her, because it was at least on set, and that person takes so long to get to in the documentary. Like,
yeah,
the people that they got for this, like some of the guy who could not more forcefully shoehorn in the story of how he met his husband.
Yes.
They just like immediately discredit, and not to say that they don't have any kind of firsthand accounts, but like the way that people are unable to hide who they are also, and that somehow kind of not discrediting them, but like for me watered down what their testimony was about the people that were actually supposed to be hearing about, was like, yeah, but also you are very clearly enjoying this a little bit, like,
yeah. Yeah. For Lea and Corey, it's so interesting, because especially being like so deep in the fandom, they weren't public with their relationship until like maybe around season 3. So I'm like, if this was clearly for show, and especially because they even mentioned like, oh, they started dating before season 1 even started airing. It was like,
I thought, was shocked to hear that too. I was like, yeah. Oh, so they like super kept it a secret for a long time.
People had like speculation. There was also speculation about Jenna Ushkowitz and Kevin McHale dating, but Kevin later came out as gay, and it was like, oh no, you guys were just best friends.
Yeah, I remember that.
I didn't believe those rumors, because I was like, they just seem like besties. Also, Jenna's been in a long-term relationship, so like, I don't think that's true. And then of course there's people who are like, they're like Chris Colfer, Darren Chris truthers, and they firmly believe that like Darren's relationship with his wife Mia, and now they have a baby, that's all just a ruse, that like they're secretly together, and it's just like,
oh, that they're secretly I don't,
yeah, that Chris Colfer and Darren Chris are secretly together, and it's like, and these are like truthers, like it's psychotic. But like but thinking of like, it's like I can see how they kind of got to that point of just like people thinking like, oh, well, they have really great chemistry, which is like, okay, that's also just called good acting, everybody. But also, that's like, these are the only people they spend time with. So they're gonna be in
they're
all
like
the pictures together.
Bonded. You're tired and like physically like exhausted,
yeah,
and cut off, and
Speaking, and it's also like, who else is can talk to these experiences except for everybody else who's on this show?
Even if you were to have happened to found someone out or at a club, the second you even started like texting them or whatever, how relatable is your week to anyone that isn't on this show?
Yeah, what'd you do today? I danced to a Journey song for 16 hours while Ryan Murphy shot at my feet with a pistol.
I was about to say, I shuffleball stealthed until my heels bled, and then I scream cried into a towel in a bathroom. Drinks at 8?
Here's a question. Is this too long? Is this document, did it need to be 3 episodes?
Absolutely not. But I another thing that I very much agreed with was this formula that we are all now subscribed to whilst complaining about it is like, we're all aware of the ones that they're dragging out. Yeah. Like this just on the way that it's edited with the retakes and of the suspenseful pauses and everything, it has just the way that it was created is very much like you all were trying to fill the time.
Yeah.
I could see like maybe an hour and a mm-hmm. half, like we're really pushing it, but like 3, I was halfway through episode 2 and I was like, oh, is this still episode 1? I'm like, wait, how is this episode 2? Because it was like, it just, a part of it was because I was like, oh, none of this is new information for me.
I was just about to say, the entire first episode is basically irrelevant to you though, because that to me kind of set a good base for knowing the show is huge, knowing that it went on forever, but having fallen off very early. So I did like the first one strictly informationally, but they did also, I feel like it's for, could also be someone going in ice cold. Like if my mom, who has no idea what a Glee is, wanted to know all about this, she could also benefit from the first one, because I do feel like they really hammer over your head like how many people liked Glee. And I was like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, the problem is they keep going back to that at various points, and it's like, we get it, the show was huge.
That's why I feel like it was for like someone who maybe has no idea about the show at all, because they really need you to know how famous these people became and how quickly they did. But I also did not know about the dance tour.
I wish I had not seen that. Like,
what?
I actually attended the first tour.
I would have died to have seen them at Hot Topic.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
I actually attended their first like actual tour. They went to they did 4 cities. They did Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, and Phoenix.
sure.
I saw them in Chicago and it was technically my first concert ever.
I was
20 years old. 20? It was either 19 or 20, and
I just checked. You were 20.
Yeah, thank you. And it was, it was great. Like my friend and I, like went in like homemade fan T-shirts because we didn't have anything. I was looking for the shirt I actually had from the concert tour, and I must have given it away recently because I had it for years. It was great. Like it was really, really
like
fun.
Like were there like pyrotechnics and stuff? Like did they have background dancers? Was it just them? Like how big was it?
Oh, it was pretty big. They did have some background dancers. Okay. It was mostly them, but they also like came out as their characters. Like they weren't performing these concerts as them as the actors.
Oh,
they were still playing their
really
characters on stage.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have killed to see that. I loved the first season of Glee. It was so good.
Yeah, it's a little weird that I also have like photos of me with like Harry Shum Jr., Jenna Ushkowitz, and Mark Salling. Because those were the ones that like came by us, like as we were, you know, waiting outside stage door.
Well,
like,
how could you have possibly known?
Oof. Exactly. And I was not his target demo. None of the time. I was a little too old, but
I didn't know about the Hot Topic tour. That's amazing. Like that, it doesn't seem like the right crossover. Like,
I
come meet
like
the cast of Glee and pick up a Slayer t-shirt. Like, what the
fuck? I feel like that is someone on paper looking at their demographic and being like, where do misfits go? And like looking at a printout and being like, well, the only place we have is Hot Topic. Like, we can't have it outside of the movie. That's the only other place I think that would have picked up on their like marketing research. So I can kind of, but I did hear that and I was like, wait, what?
So yeah, they also sold like Glee merch at Hot Topic. They also sold it at Borders, RIP. I had a Glee coffee to go thermos. I had a messenger bag. I had a keychain. I had just like, I had as much stuff as I could find in the Midwest. Oh, absolutely. When I, like I said, when I said I was deep in the fandom, I'm also talking like live journal fandom.
Oh
like
my God.
Eventually
live
moving
journal.
Into, yes. Moving on to Tumblr. For fandom stuff, I was doing like message board RPGs as the characters, like just it was a lot.
That does sound like a lot.
Really was not joking when I said I was deep in the fandom.
So this,
oh my goodness, that's first... like D&D for Glee. You were writing
yes.
as them.
D and Glee.
Yes.
So this
correct.
First episode mostly focuses on Cory Monteith. And
yes.
his drug problems. We find out he had drug issues well before the show started. I don't know what they're going for with almost all of this, because I get that. I mean, I guess finding out the depths of his drug issues is, you know, newsworthy, but it seems like they're pushing this idea that like, well, did maybe taking Glee force him back into doing drugs and that's what killed him? And it's like, yeah, maybe, but that also doesn't mean he shouldn't have taken this show. Like, I imagine like if he had just like not succeeded in his dreams, mm-hmm. something about that might have pushed him back into
drugs,
too.
I was just about
too.
To say, can you imagine passing on this and then seeing what Glee did? And if that wouldn't have possibly super depressed him in LA and, like, made him spiral, you know, even sooner possibly, that's, I feel like you could say that about any potential major downfall in someone's life who struggles with addiction is, like, was that the thing? And it's, like, it could have been, but that's not the show's fault.
we'll never know. I mean, there was that one person in the documentary who was saying like, could this have happened had he never gotten the show? Maybe. We'll never know. Like, he absolutely could have. And I think part of it, I'm torn, because it's like, I think he could have relapsed, but on the one hand, I'm like, it's not the show's fault, but it is also the show's fault. Like, it's the byproduct of the show. It didn't help, that's for certain. Like, I am speaking from somebody who is not in an addiction program or anything. I don't, you know, I don't have any strong relations with people who are who have addictions or haven't had conversations. So this is with a grain of salt. But like, the way that they framed it and the way that I've seen friends kind of talk about it on social media is that like a big component of it is support from outside, from your friends, from your family, from everybody. And if you are at work for 16 hours a day and you're not seeing those people, you don't have time, you don't have time off, period. You don't have time to maintain those relationships. You don't have time really to yourself. You don't have time to relax. You don't have the ability to even like, you know, if he wanted to go to, you know, AA or NA or anything, he can't. There's no time like to go to these programs. When are you going to get to a meeting? Like, there was just no ability for him to have a proper support system while having this job. And I think it is partly the job's fault because he just didn't have the time, even on
the base level of like protecting an asset. I think that whatever was done was kind of like people trying to be there for him on a personal basis, but whatever like breaks he took might have just been of his own volition and like too little too late possibly, because it sounds like they kind of wrote him out when he started disappearing on his own, instead of like you saying him having anyone to be like, hey, things are getting really bad, like I need to step back before I start using again, or whatever that potentially could have looked like. Like you said, it doesn't sound like there was much space for that kind of conversation for him to be like, well, and even they were kind of talking about the culture of the show and the demands, where if I've definitely been on jobs where you could tell someone like, oh, well, tell your job that you need a break, and they'll laugh in your face and be like, yeah, I'll just get fired. Like, that's not an you don't feel like that's an option.
Right. So. Yeah, I do genuinely feel like Ryan Murphy does not get enough heat in this documentary. Like, at the end of the day, the work schedule was him. Like, the things he put the crew through especially was him. And I really reject the idea that them going back to work so quick after Corey Monteith died should be on Leah Michelle's shoulders. It's like, this show is your creation, Ryan Murphy. Fucking take charge in that minute and ask everyone, not just the star of the show, what they want to do. Take a fucking poll if you have to.
As a team, right. Like, you are the people that make this show happen. Can we do this right now? Like, where is everyone at?
Yeah, it's almost like he just used Leah as a scapegoat to, like, you know, get back to work so quickly. And it was like, well, Leah said it was okay. And it was like, okay, but, like, you're the showrunner and you can make a different choice.
And I wonder how aware he was of different relationships on set and that kind of being the perfect person to put a decision like that on. Because I can imagine getting the call and being like, well, did you hear we're going back because Leah said da da da, and being like, of course she did. And it immediately even would divert people on the job's attention away from him being the person that actually makes that call.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that is a really, really good theory.
That's some chess shit.
Yeah. What did we think of the group of talking heads they assembled for this? I feel like there are a lot of fringe characters.
A lot of the notes that I agreed with that you made could really be summed up in like grasping at straws. Like the people that they got to interview, the length of the documentary itself, everything is kind of just like a little more stretched out than it needs to be. And that takes what little validity that is there. It kind of dissipates because they've filled it with so much other stuff that it makes it matter less to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost, it has nuggets of credibility that completely get lost because they made it three episodes and interviewed these people and left in things that to me don't need to be really shared outside of them maybe having like a dinner with someone two wines in. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
They seem like people that genuinely cared about them, but not necessarily that should have been interviewed for a documentary. I don't know.
Yeah.
Some of them. Like, I like the roommate and I love Naya's dad.
Yeah, Naya's dad needed to be there. The roommate made sense.
I love him. Like, I feel like he was even kind of, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, later, but like, again, no one really even talks about her having a past relationship with Mark.
Nope.
And what that looked like when she found out, like, none of that. I was waiting for him to say something about that.
That's one of the other really infuriating things about this documentary is it's like 75% Corey Monteith and Leah Michelle.
Yes.
And then that last episode, I'm like, well, I'm ready to hear a whole lot about Mark Salling. And they're like, yeah, he was a pedophile, but he was a great guy. Anyway, did you know Naya Rivera drowned? It's like, well, that, you know, it's, you're really glossing over that.
Even one of the crew ladies, I was kind of in the same headspace of where are they going to go after dropping all of this information, even like the amount that they found and all of that stuff. And like I said, I was waiting for Naya's dad or something. And then they just have one of the crew ladies say, yeah, I mean, a lot of the things that have happened after this show is over just horrific. And even like she, you, She used some, I think it was horrific, but she used some other adjective that I was waiting for her to say something like more damning about what that looks like. And she kind of just lumped it all together in all of the stuff that happened, quote unquote, after the show. Even the fact that they don't have anyone, they have the news people say it, but I feel like they put a lot of the harshest stuff, harshest information and real information in writing. So no one ever says it. You just like read a lot of the stuff that made you be like, oh my God, what? I was just reading all of that stuff. They didn't really have anyone to speak on the things that I want to know the most about.
Yeah. Just the fact that like almost no one from Cory Monteith's family is involved in this.
That's what takes the credibility away. It's like, I don't know. I wondered if these people, which I would respect, if they just don't speak, they just are not, they could not get anyone. That's what I thought. I thought they just could not get anyone. And so the people that we could get were Naya's dad, who is already used to being front-facing because he's a self-proclaimed someone that's okay being in the public eye, and people that clearly will talk to this about anyone who will listen to them, some of them. Like Naya's friend, who clearly does not like Lea Michele, even though I don't know if he's ever met her. Like, who else?
It was like an assistant to a showrunner. It was, or assistant to a producer. It was like two different hair people. It was a rigging gaffer that I was like, okay.
Only have him in there, I think, to speak to the guy who worked himself potentially to death.
Because it was his brother.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. The first episode and a half, I'm like, okay, you're great, but why are you here specifically? And then you figure out why.
Yeah, it took a long time to get to that. And it was because I was like, why are we interviewing a gaffer?
It's like who they could get. Yeah, because at first I was just like, this is who would publicly speak about this, who like has the energy and time and even wants to be associated with, you know, whatever this is going to be.
Yeah, the whole second episode of this felt like filler to me. Like, we could have just lopped that whole 45 minutes off of this and made this like a 90-minute thing.
Yes, exactly. A lot of the issues I have with it are with whether or not more credible people were accessible and editing. It's just like, this didn't need to be three episodes. Yeah. We could have focused this information a lot better. And I'm literally in my head trying to edit. And it's like, should they have done everyone else before and ended with Cory? Because clearly that's who we have the most information about. Or like, I feel like that's why. I feel like they had enough for a lot about Cory, but there were too many other things that they felt were like too drama worthy to leave out.
Right.
They were definitely doing like a chronological retelling of like what happened, which like I get why they would choose to do that, but also like, I don't know, it's just like choosing to do a docuseries like almost 10 years after he died of this guy who is only a star on this one show seems really strange. And like, it's
so they had, you know, to make it about the show to that whole like E! True Hollywood Story spin of if there's a curse or not. Like, they kind of had to
and they definitely had to be like, oh, is there a curse to this? And I'm like, I actually would say yes, there is a curse to the show, but not in the way that this docuseries was portraying it. Is that like most of these actors have had a really difficult time getting jobs after that show. Mind you, most of them will never have to work a day in their lives because they have made so much money on this show.
They don't have to, but they got into actors. And they...
Right. But like Darren Criss is, I'm like going through the whole cast in my head because like even like Lea Michele, like she didn't really get any film work after that. She did like the New Year's Eve movie and then she never got hired for anything again.
Back to Broadway stuff?
It took her a while to get back to Broadway. She tried to do film stuff out here, but nobody would hire her because she is notoriously difficult to work with. And then she finally went back to Broadway to play Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl, which is like her dream role. And, you know, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Well, Jane Lynch quit that because Lea Michele joined the cast?
That's a rumor. No. That's not what happened. But okay. She did quit the cast when Beanie Feldstein left. So they brought in another, Tova Feldshuh to play the same part as Jane Lynch. It wasn't that she quit. She very much dispelled rumors of like, I didn't quit because Leo was coming. Okay. I quit because I wanted to do this with, I am leaving in solidarity with Beanie. Like, recast both of us. Like, it wasn't because Lea Michele was coming in.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's what she said. It could be false, but who knows?
Adam, with your speculation,
But yeah, I would say Jane Lynch and Darren Criss are like the two actors who had like substantial careers. Because Darren became a Ryan Murphy muse, so he got cast in everything Ryan Murphy afterwards. So he took over Lea Michele's spot because he's a little easier to work with. I'm assuming this is all alleged. And Jane Lynch because she was already established. But the rest of them the rest of them have done like some indie stuff. Chris Colfer stopped acting entirely and he is writing children's books. You know, and he's been writing them for 10 years now. Like, he's, you know, an established children's author now.
Yeah, that's the thing I was wondering is how many of them are just like doing choreography and shit like that.
Many of them sung and danced before but weren't necessarily.
Amber Riley is also doing stuff, but she's like not. She's kind of in the middle. She's not doing the amount of stuff that like Darren Criss is doing, but she's doing more than the rest of them. So, I actually saw her in Little Shop when it was at the Pasadena Playhouse, like pre-pandemic. She played Audrey II and fucking killed it at curtain call because she's doing voiceover basically for the whole show. She came out in like sweatpants. I was like, you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The curse would be being that young, forced to work that hard, then being on the cusp of social media and being like some of the first test subjects of like youth and that extra lens and the constant. Like, the way they kind of described it reminded me of how people talk about 80s kids, like the Brat Pack and stuff. And just, like, that plus phones.
Yeah. One of the things I really hated about this documentary, several things, was all of the sleuthing they were trying to do around the death of Corey Monteith and Naya Rivera both. Like, with Corey Monteith, he was clean for a long time. Relapsed and didn't have the same tolerance he used to have, and it killed him.
Which happens all the time.
All the time. Like, it's such a common thing.
Yeah.
And, like, you can't, like, officially confirm that, but that's already out there that is probably what happened.
Right. That's the only thing that sucks for people who are just, like, dying to have that level of closure, even if it's, like, his family members or people that actually, like, need it to, you know, would feel better on a daily basis with it, is, like, he didn't happen to be partying with anyone. He was just up there alone. So there's, like, no friend that's, like, come forward and said that, you know what I mean? There's no one around to corroborate anything. So, like Jack said, we'll just, like, never fully know. But that is what... And I did like the one entertainment reporter that kind of said, like, that's what all this comes from, is people just not having information and needing to fill that space of discomfort with something.
Yeah, they do it with Naya Rivera's death, too.
Hers was way worse, though. Like, feel like in terms of them having way less to talk about and just, like, reaching so hard.
Yeah. I mean, she drowned. And that I also have... heard the theory that they land on years ago, which is that they were swimming and the boat floated away and she was able to get the kid back on the boat and she didn't have the energy to get back on the boat, so she drowned. That sounds perfectly reasonable.
I just love all of the stuff that was like, oh, well, why was she on the lake that day?
Yes.
It was like, because it was the middle of a pandemic and that was like one of the few things you could do with your child is like take them on a lake on a boat, just the two of you. Like, I was like, it's not this big of a reach, guys. Like,
Let's calm down.
Because also, what kind of weird, dramatic suicide would that be? For me, like, I'm going to rent a pontoon boat and then go out into the middle of the ocean and leave, like, that does not make sense.
No.
At all. Like, you wouldn't just be, like, FaceTiming your, even that. I wonder if that was some kind of weird bad edit that they did, because she was like FaceTiming him trying to talk about the anchor and stuff, and then the phone went dead, but he didn't seem like concerned. Like, there's no way I wouldn't be talking to my dad about anchoring a boat and my FaceTime would end and we wouldn't at some point like call back and be like, oh, I got it or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, for a second, they try to make it like they were mid-conversation and then the phone call ended while she was trying to anchor the boat. Like, they try to create all of this mystery.
Yeah, they try to do that with so many things. They treat the fact that Glee lost some viewers over the years like it's a fucking horror movie plot. Like, there's all this dark music and there's, like, smoke on the screen. It's like, calm down.
Well, if anything, I feel like all of that horror should have been saved for when they were talking about the success, because they were talking about things getting bigger and bigger, about how he didn't want to take the time to drive to Long Beach anymore. And like, those were the times where I was like, oh God, this is what like capitalism is in entertainment, is just like constantly having to beat yourself and just making everything, like the one older lady who was like, every week it was like, okay, so how can we physically do this under budget in this amount of time? Like, how can we even make this a reality?
Yeah. It takes such a long time to get back to Cory Monteith in this documentary. Like,
I didn't think we were ever going to. I thought we were, I don't know what the organization is supposed to be, because the information's so off. Like, there's so much for Cory, and then there's like a couple of other random suicides and deaths and heart attacks and stuff, and then they stretch out what little they have of Naya so much, so it's like, it looks like how your phone uses memory. Like, there's so much Cory, and then there's all these other little colors, and it's like, what's going on?
Yeah. And we've touched on it a little bit, but I think it's the hairdresser guy is the
with
one
the
who
good mutton chops.
Yeah,
I do. I love his look. He gets a little dramatic, but I did love him in the beginning.
His name is also Doug, spelled D-U-G-G. So
I 100% noticed that. I was like, get out of here, Doug.
Not just that, but his job title was hair department head. And it's like, wait, do you run the hair department, or do they just like experiment on your head when they're trying to like work up shit in the lab? But Doug with two G's is the one who tells this story about Cory Monteith relapsing. And he says, well, he was at a party and he told this person who was with him that he wanted to maybe have a drink. And this person, who was a cast member, told him, well, go ahead and have a drink. I'll be here to protect you. And this guy says it was someone Cory loved. And then he's like, but I'm not going to say the name because I heard it secondhand. It's like, everyone knows what you're doing right now. You're trying to make it seem like Leah Michele is the one who made Cory fall off the wagon.
This, right.
Especially with that, it was someone he loved.
Yes.
And it's like, man, I love my mom, my wife, and my friend Jeff. And I love them all in very different ways. Someone he loved could mean fucking anything. You either say the name in that story or don't tell that story. That's fucked up, Doug.
I get really upset with just how much, like, you know, how much Leah is getting, like, the blame for Corey's death in this. Of just, like, she did not cause this man's death. She did not do that. She, you know, having a relationship on top of everything might not have helped, but they want to make it sound like she personally, like, handed him the syringe, handed him the bottles, like, and she was like, okay, have fun, locked the door. Like, they make it sound like she personally did this to him. And it was like, I don't think she did. I think it's safe to assume that she's rather high maintenance in relationships. I don't think that's a far assumption to make, but like, I think it's really awful to try and blame her for his relapse, for his, you know, for all of this. It's just,
if anything,
it's just wholly ridiculous.
If anything, I would say she reads more as the kind, if you're going to even go along with the picture of her that they paint in this documentary, she seems like the kind of partner that would be so focused on themselves that like you could potentially relapse and they wouldn't notice. Like she would be, yeah, be like, hey, I'm going back to Canada for a week, and she'd be like, cool, bye, like see you when you get back. And as long as you like text her whenever she texts you, you could probably party for a decent amount of time and her maybe not really know. Because I wondered, as someone who knows very little, how together were they at that point? Had they broken up and gotten back together at all? Like, were they together for the whole time? Do you know anything about that?
I mean, weirdly, they were very quiet about their relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they didn't post, like, a ton of, like, they only until after they really, like, came public with it did, you know,
red
did they,
stuff
like,
together.
They did a lot of red carpet stuff together. But, like, when the documentary said, like, oh, there were a couple things that were, like, new information to me. When they said, oh, they were together since before the first season dropped, I was like, that's news to me. Because, like, fans didn't find out about that until about season three. Like, we didn't see that. And so, uh-huh, like, you know, it's – I mean, people kind of – some people had guesses. But, like, I mean, it hadn't – it really stayed mum. But like, you know, they, I don't know, it's just like they posted the normal amount of stuff that like celebrity couples post. Like, it's, I don't know, it just like, but then again, like, so did Jenna and Kevin, and they were just friends. Like, right, once again, it all goes back to the fact that these people spent every waking hour together. Of course they're gonna post stuff together. Like, it's just, I just,
yeah. Yeah, and around this point in the documentary, there is a moment that I don't know if they left it in because of the irony or if they just, the people making this were too dumb to know to edit this out. But there's this interview with Ryan Murphy, and it's this video clip where he's like, you know, boys don't go through what Lea Michele's going through.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, motherfucker, you're not going through what Lea Michele is going through on this documentary. And you,
well,
absolutely
he's
should
also
be.
Just gonna, that kind of realigns with our new theory from earlier about him and making the decision to go back about Lea is like, yeah, maybe he just constantly diverts. Yeah. Maybe the second you bring something up, he just brings up something else so that now you're talking about that instead of his decision making as a showrunner.
Yeah.
You're talking about, like, who's dating who and gender norms.
And even then, like, they dwell so much on how soon the show came back after Cory Monteith's death. And, like, that's not a thing that happens a lot. It's not very often that the lead or one of the lead stars on a show just dies while the show is on the air. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to give people some leeway in how they deal with that. They might not make the best decision under that amount of stress. And like, yeah, it's a bummer the show came back when it did, but it did come back later than they expected it to. If you dig into that, it was only like,
and it's like they'll let somebody die in the bathroom of an Olive Garden and they won't even close. So yeah. Like, in the grand scheme of things, there are a lot of different decisions we could be making as a society about how to deal with death and giving people enough space to grieve in different ways. But yeah, I feel like I, as a marketing major, really was attributing a lot of credit to people with syndication numbers and things that are like these long-term goals that if you have put in this much work thus far, I can see people just like being like, we're gonna make it. Like, we're gonna make it to get this money where all of this work kind of sets me up, us up for life, you know?
I was getting, so the syndication, so the 100th episode actually came in during season 5 was their 100th episode. Mm. And so the thing that gets me is that at the time, syndication was like the thing, but now syndication barely matters.
Right.
Like, things aren't getting syndicated. They're just being put on streaming. And so, like, right. I don't think I've ever seen Glee aired in syndication anywhere. So, like, it's like, what was it all for? Like,
oh my
you know,
gosh.
Obviously you
I'm
can't
really
predict the future, but like, what is it all for?
That. I would have loved for them to have buttoned that up that way.
Yeah.
It's just the stress that they were all put under and like, yeah.
And the story,
you can definitely tell.
I was also just thinking about the story and what you said, Adam, is like, absolutely, you could never predict something like this.
Yeah.
But I was also like thinking about the fans and not that you would want something to end that suddenly, but kind of like respecting the storyline in a different way that would possibly be like, yeah, we're going to do right by this character and not like necessarily end it that abruptly, but I don't know. Like,
yeah. Well, there's they keep interviewing that Steven Glickman guy who was a friend of Corey's in that they both were doing TV shows on the same lot at the same time. And I just hate, like, it's already very dramatic that Corey Monteith died during the course of Glee being on the air, but they're trying to make it so much more dramatic. And one of the examples is Steven Glickman being like, well, this was a juggernaut of a show. They weren't just going to end it. Dude, it lasted one more season. Like, they finished.
No, it was double that.
So they had, the show had actually been renewed after season four. It had been renewed for 5 and 6. So it had actually been renewed for 2 seasons. And then Corey died the summer between seasons 4 and 5. At that point, it's like they had already had 2 seasons renewed. So it was like, okay, but we've already agreed to Fox that we're going to do another
two seasons
of this.
Kind of like planned for.
Yeah. And so like they hadn't decided that the 6th season was going to be abbreviated. It was a half season. It was only 13 episodes. And the 5th season was the biggest dumpster fire of a season of that show. And
yeah,
to say that because seasons 4 and 6 were also very bad, but season 5 was the absolute worst. And it makes sense if they had to like rewrite the whole thing on the fly to be like, well, the storyline we had with Corey Monteith is now with Finn is now gone. So we just have to redo it.
Is it just very much like what is going on as a season?
Oh my God. They had a school shooting episode. It was a whole thing.
Oh no.
It's the worst. It wasn't what you think, but it was also like, this is the worst.
So the shooter wasn't
the
like
you could
singing
have done
or anything. I don't.
No. You
Did
have to watch
Pearl
it because it is so bad.
It better
Mama.
Be.
I don't. I, well, the name
I
of the episode is Shooting
my...
Star. It's terrible.
No,
but, no.
Why did they name it that?
It's really bad. But the thing is about it, too, is that, like, there was also such pressure from the studio to do these seasons because that show was a cash cow.
Oh my gosh.
Not only did they make money off of people watching the show, they made money off of the concerts. They didn't even touch on this they released tracks, actual professionally recorded tracks for every episode that they sold on iTunes.
Yeah.
So they also made money off of the music itself.
Oh my gosh, they were making so much money.
Hand over fist. Like they were making so much money. So they had a vested interest in making sure that they kept with the season order and that those seasons happened. So,
okay.
I mean, honestly, all of the stuff of like, oh, it's easiest for us to blame Lea Michele for this is like, yes, it's her fault that they went back so soon. When really, I'm like, oh, I feel
There's
like,
no
I
way
feel
you
like
gonna...
really putting the pieces together that it's really like Fox was putting the pressure on Ryan Murphy being like, well, oh, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because like, I'm guessing there was some like contractual stuff for him too. And like,
we have already like, slated for you to make this money for us.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so it's like, if they cut that episode order down from, I think that season was like maybe like 20 episodes instead of 22. It's like they lost the revenue on those episodes they didn't do, and then they lost the revenue on the songs that they couldn't release and sell. So like, I can just see Fox looking at the bottom line and be like, okay, we get that he's dead, but like, can you guys like please get back to work soon. Thank you.
Everyone has someone to answer to. The real curse is capitalism.
Right?
The real curse is capitalism. We've removed the hood, everybody.
the Glee Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah.
The third episode focuses mostly on Naya Rivera, and it's 40 minutes long, so I was like, okay, we're going to get an even 20, right? Mark Salling and Naya Rivera? Oh, no.
It, like, picks up on him barely.
Very barely. And what I do like is all the clips from Glee that they show that are, like, pointing to him being a pedophile.
Oh, my gosh. That one red carpet one where he does not break when he just, like, stares at the camera and says, I'm the worst guy or something like that.
Yeah, that was grim.
Woo!
There's the clip from Glee where he asks the cheerleader who's trying to sleep with him, he says, aren't you underage? And she goes, I have a fake ID. And he goes, good enough for me. Like, that was on television.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, though, that I will not at all come to his defense, but more blame the writing, is like, yeah, it was still cute to have, like, a Matthew McConaughey guy as long as he was a senior. Like, he was still at school. So, absolutely, like, I feel like it's not that it's that old. It's, like, 2009 wasn't that long ago, but I do think that we were close enough to, like, joking in teen movies and stuff about stuff like that that got a laugh. Absolutely. Like, it didn't age well, but, like, don't put that on him. He, like, even them being like, oh, well, we were writing stuff that they were really saying. It's like, yeah, but you weren't writing like, hey, I downloaded an awesome gift of a child the other day. Like, you wrote that because you made a character that was that dude, because everyone has a friend like that dude. Like,
yeah.
Especially then. Like, now you have friends like that, I guess you like that guy now, they would just write as more of a villain and he would be like, oh, can't say stuff anymore. But, like,
right,
that character still exists. Sorry, Jack.
Yeah. I will say that the scene that they showed of, like, her saying, like, you know, I have a fake ID, that is actually from seasons 4 or 5. And that character, Kitty, is a new cheerleader who was brought in season 4 after he had, like, that, after Puck had graduated from high school. So he was an adult.
Oh, he is
in the
older.
Show. He is older in the show, and she's, like, a sophomore. Yeah, so it's gross. And I would like to correct, I did look up the episodes. Shooting Star, which, once again, that is the title of the episode, is in season 4, not season 5. That's my bad, but it's still a bad episode. It's still bad.
At least it's not.
It doesn't change the content.
At least it's not like how they kill Corey Monteith off on the show. That would have been grim.
I mean, I will say the one, I know we're trying to, like, move on from Corey Monteith, but, like, I will say the one nice thing that they did in the quarterback episode, which was in a very emotional episode if you've never seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it.
No, I thought about watching it and was like, oh, God, I don't know if I could do that.
I mean, it's devastating. But, like, you can tell this is a cast and crew that is still actively
really
grieving.
Yes.
They're like, oh, I'm there. We can keep rolling. Do you want to do it again?
Yeah. we can capitalize on this. But I like that they left Finn's death ambiguous, mm-hmm. and that they were like, we're not going to say what it was.
They were like,
it happened. It was like, we heard that this happened.
Wow.
And it's like them reeling after it. But it's like, I like that they didn't declare anything, because okay. I think any choice they would have made would have felt disingenuous.
Mm.
And because everybody knew what happened.
Exactly.
Everybody knew what the reality was. But I think deciding to do the reality when that's so far outside of the character, I think, like, if they would have said, like, oh, no, Finn was abusing drugs, it would have been like, okay, but that's not the character. Like, that, we've never seen that happen in this show. Like,
there's
that
no foreshadowing that he's, like, a pressured all-American boy that turned to that or anything. So there wasn't really any need to, like, make that.
None of that. Yeah, and, like, at the end of the 4th season, like, his character was on, like, an upswing. And so it was also just, like, it didn't make any sense. And so, but any other option, if they would have been like, he had a heart attack, would have been like, at 19? Like, that feels far-fetched.
It would have had to be like a car accident or something.
That, yeah.
Which, okay, they already did the car accident thing, though, so they couldn't do that again.
Same we're just, car. We're just serial killer.
They just turn it into Christine.
Yeah. So the final episode of Glee aired on March 20th, 2015. Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday.
My birthday. And shortly after that, Mark Salling pleads guilty to possession of child pornography.
This is the one that I never knew about. I don't think I ever knew about this.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, it's dark, but they also don't, like, they give us the really basic details. They're like, yeah, you know, his girlfriend tipped off the police after finding some images on his computer, and turns out there were like 20,000 of them, and he hung himself in Angeles National Forest. Great guy, though. Let's drag Naya Rivera's name through the mud now.
They really just use the footage of pulling him out of the canyon more than anything, to the point that I kept thinking that was someone else. Like, they use the footage of them finding his body more than they talk about what actually led to, I don't know, which, I mean, not like there's much to say after you hear 20,000 images and videos.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't seem like they kept even many reactions. Like, for as much as we hear people talk about and read like retweets about Leah, for them to not have even any tweets of reactions of anyone really to Mark, did they do any of that?
The ones they had were just like, hey, bro, gonna miss you. And they had like, there were talking heads. There was one who was like, I can't imagine what it must feel like to be that alone. And it's like,
yeah,
listen, documentary, you don't have to do this. Like, you can just tell us what Mark Salling did and fucking move on. Like, you don't have to try, of all the things to try and sugarcoat and like soften the blow of in this documentary, it's this. That's insane.
Well, it's weird that they do that after they do like a creep supercut of all the other stuff. So it's not like they're that worried about damning him, because they'll do it through clips from the show, but they just don't allow any space after him taking his own life.
Yeah.
That doesn't play into the agenda that is the tragedy of Glee.
Right.
Like, it's kind of like, we need you to go back to thinking about the curse now. Like, it doesn't really behoove us for you to focus on him being a dirtbag, so we're just not going to go there.
I think would have benefited their theory of like, oh, this is a curse. This is if they actually like went into like talking, because they had a psychologist on the show, you know, talking about it. And I'm really glad they had her talking about it, because like her saying like, oh, the reason he killed himself was probably because of, you know, it was these reasons, was because he didn't see a future for himself. And I'm like, that's what I was saying when it happened. Yeah. And I was like, I don't, frankly, I was like, I don't blame him for doing that. Yeah. It sucks for the victims that they don't get they don't get to see him, you know, go to jail or anything. But like, yeah, it made a lot of sense. But like, I think if the documentary really wanted to go in on the like, oh, isn't it crazy that three people from this show that was a hit died? I think that they would have really had to talk about how and why Mark Salling came into possession of that type of material. And it would have forced them to kind of talk about like and discuss like, you know, stars who are, and this happens all the time, that these young stars, it happens on for YouTubers and everything, that they have a young fan base.
Yep.
And especially with new social media that they're willing to
You're
send these things
someone
because
7 years younger than you actually are. You've at this point had how many years of summers of just like high-pitched falsetto prepubescent girls screaming at you with all the passion they have in their body that it's now up to you to be the adult and discern that this young child is misinformed and not being a good enough person to do that. And you were just like, could not have more access to your victims.
Yeah, they would have had to go into that. And
they
definitely weren't going to
show tons of footage of him at those Hot Topic stores after that or anything like that.
No. No, I just don't think this docuseries was brave enough to go there and actually talk about that. And I don't think that they would have had anybody to talk about him enough and like what they saw and what they experienced around him. And like, and I just, you know, it was one of the, and it's like, the other thing too is like, I don't think they're brave enough to go there. I also don't think they wanted to go there, but they had to talk about him because you'd be remiss if you didn't. Like, be like, oh, yeah, these, but they basically did that too, where they were like, oh my God, these two stars on this show died super tragically. And this other one that had a lot of child pornography on his computer. But you know what? Yeah. These two other stars died really tragically.
Which I
and
think
it's like,
adds to like everything being so off balance. Because it's like, you have three episodes, you have three stars, you have three, I think, crew deaths, possibly more, that they, like, it gets real choppy.
They so badly wanted the thesis to be, like, look what stardom does to young celebrities. Mm-hmm. I think that was, like, the thesis that they wanted to have, but they...
That and the curse. B-story curse.
That and the curse. the curse. But, like, they so badly wanted that to be the theory, because they also showed with Naya, they showed like, oh, her marital issues and things like that, and like trying to frame of like, oh, it was stress, and be like, I don't doubt that it was stress, but like, you know, but also like, she was done with the show, like
it seemed like it was just Naya, like,
yeah, it was such a long
time. Who doesn't have a friend like that? It's like, yeah, girl, stop messing his car up, you're an adult, like everybody has friends that do things like that when they're mad, and they'll be like, I know I probably shouldn't have done that, but I don't care. And it's like, some of us just have enough money to not stay in jail after we vandalize people's cars. But like, that wasn't some like crazy curse. That's like, that just seemed like a part of who she was as a person. That was another time that I liked her dad being in there, because he was just like, yeah, I love my daughter, she also egg cars sometimes.
Yeah, one of the things I found really frustrating about the Mark Salling part is you were able to find like three or four people to be like, yeah, but he was, you know, he was a nice guy, I feel bad for him. You couldn't find one person who was like, okay, Lea Michele's a lot, but like, there's not one person who could have apologized for all the things that people are saying about her in this documentary. You could
Again,
only find,
I don't think they were interested.
That's what I hate. Like, I hate that. Like, you needed people to apologize for Mark Salling in this that badly, but you couldn't get one person to be like, okay,
well, I think
Lea Michele was under a lot of stress.
I think that they kind of call themselves out on it, where it's like, they probably would have found someone like that if she was gone. If she was dead, they probably would have found someone, but she's fine and in Funny Girl. So she gets to be the person that murdered Corey. Like,
and there's another crazy quote from a journalist when they start moving into the Naya Rivera part, where he says, it's just crazy how with the media, one day they're dragging you through the mud, and then the next day they're praising you because you're dead. And it's like, what is the point of that? Are you saying like, well, we should still drag her through the mud?
I think that's another quote that badly conveys what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Because I honestly, they're trying to say like that it seems disingenuous when all of a sudden this person that you were downing a second ago is all of a sudden an angel because they passed away, but they seem to do that with Mark. That's why I feel like they're calling themselves out. That's why I was like, maybe they did do that on purpose.
I don't think this documentary is that smart.
Though that whole bit of like that, like, you know, dragging people and then the next minute they're dead. It's just like, no. First, you're dragging through the mud, and then you don't talk about them for 3 years. And then they're dead.
And
that's really what
die,
happened.
You're like, oh no.
Like, it's not like Naya had a ton of stuff happening. I think she was in Devious Maids after that. And like, she did a couple of things, but like didn't have this like, you know, substantial career afterwards that she rightfully deserved because she's very talented, you know. Yeah. And like, and that's not to say most of them, it's like they all deserve whatever career that they want because they are all so deeply talented. But like, just to say that like she was dragged through the mud up until her death and be like, no, nobody was paying attention to Naya Rivera. That's what was happening.
Again, and I do think that they kind of took an E! True Hollywood approach to that edit again, because I feel like that man, if it's the person I think it was, because I remember it's like, I think he was also a hairstylist or wardrobe and he had like his hair part to the side and slick to one side. But I feel like that could have been him just speaking in generalities about Hollywood. And they were like, that's a really powerful place for us to edit this in and just stop with an image of Naya. Because he seemed like he could have just been talking about celebrity in general. Maybe not. Yeah.
Was
maybe
he
I'm
more? Was he the one in like the office with like the brick background?
Oh, see, I thought it was like the Latin man that was sitting in the auditorium, and he was like, "I mean, that's what it is with celebrity. Like, you could be talking, they can praise you the one day, and then the next minute, they love you because you're dead."
Yeah, it was that guy. Okay. He was a reporter.
Oh, I didn't realize he was a reporter. Okay, okay. But yeah, I felt even the first time he said it, they kind of, he says it, they switch to Naya and then it goes black. And I was like, that's also just them being like, oh my gosh, timestamp when he said that, because we're going to use that.
Yeah.
And kind of associate it with Naya. But like you're saying, that not actually being what the course of her life was.
Yeah.
But that being like blaming, like turning the thing around. Like, look at you watching this documentary. What celebs have you been talking shit about today? Like, look at yourself in the mirror. Like, that was supposed to be an indictment on us as an audience.
And I hate when a true crime documentary pulls that shit. There's one on Netflix called Don't Fuck with Cats. And
yes!
The end, the woman turns to the camera and goes, or are you part of it? It's like, no, motherfucker, you're the one making the true crime documentary. You were the one egging that dude on the internet. I don't have shit to do with this. And that's kind of how I felt about this documentary by the end. It's like, fuck you. Like, again, I hate all the sleuthing they do around her death. Jack already brought up, but someone's like, what made her go on the boat that day? It's like, is that a serious question? Like, what made her go on a boat with her kid? They were going swimming.
Well, they do have the one person who's like, maybe she was just a mom that wanted to go out on a boat. But like one person says that after they ask that question, like, open-ended, like,
five. Then they throw that person off a boat.
And then but that like, woman has to swim back.
But like, most importantly, they didn't mention that it's like maybe she was just a mom that wanted to go out with her kid. They never mentioned.
That's what
it
I mean. Like
during it was during lockdown. She during lockdown. Yeah. Like, that was one of the few things you could fucking do. Like,
even the fact that it wasn't like a group of friends on a boat or like, you know.
Yeah, and they were like, why didn't she have anybody with her?
Right.
Because it was during lockdown, you idiots.
Right.
That's, she couldn't have anybody with us.
We weren't hanging out, like, even with our entourages.
No, because that was July of 2020. Like, people, like, we still, nobody was vaccinated. It was still just like, oh, be in your pod.
I was about to say, parents hadn't even, like, fully formed. They're like, I'm done with this. Like, your clean kids are playing with my clean kids' things or whatever.
Yeah, like, it was like, that's what she's going to do. Also, she's a celebrity. She can't just take her kid to the park and, like, be normal about it. Yeah. And also, you can just have a, like, a fun trip with your child to go on a fucking boat. Yeah. Why is this so fucking hard? Like, it was just, like, it's not. Like,
they had 15 more minutes, Jack. They can't just end it. They needed to have something to go with at least 10 more minutes of lake drone shots. And they had already done the forensic rundown with that guy on the boat.
It couldn't have been carbon monoxide poisoning. Get out!
Of course it wasn't. She wasn't a covered inch. Here's the thing about the COVID point two that would have made bringing that up in the documentary very worthwhile. If you flash back to COVID, we were, like, not all of us, but a lot of people were going out and, like, trying new shit because you couldn't do all the same things. So it might not just be that she went out on that boat because it was a COVID activity she could do, she probably wasn't that experienced with a pontoon boat.
Clearly was not, according to her dad.
Yeah, and that would have contributed to it also.
Yeah.
That's also a very father-daughter relationship, too, that he's like, eh, she didn't know shit about boats. She could have been the best boater in the world, and he should have been like, I still knew more about boats than her. And you're like,
I feel like he's also like, we were boat people. And it's like, there's no way my dad's going to call us boat people, but also I'm real-time learning about anchors. Like, those two things don't go together.
Yeah.
It's so hard to, like, frame that as, like, a result of the show. Like, she's just a mom who tragically drowned in a lake, like after that point. Like,
the only connection is that she was on the show at one point.
Yeah. Right? And I think
it's just a tragedy that happened to someone that was on the show.
Yeah.
And that's why, Jack, they use that woman's audio multiple times that says things were even happening after the show ended. Like, she says that in every single episode. So by then, you shouldn't have that question anymore, Jack. The curse continues. Like, that's why you're not supposed to.
I mean, it didn't work on you,
I don't think.
No, but here's the thing. I can't lie and tell you that I didn't think that when Naya's death did happen.
Like,
because
it popped
I was
in
like,
your head.
It was like, oh, that's three people from this cast. That's really weird. And I'm just like, oh, please let this not be a curse. And, like, please don't come for anybody else in this cast, like, in weird ways.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's one of those things where it's uncanny, but it's just, like, it's more of a coincidence than, like, an actual
thing. It is, but also,
thing.
Nobody else associated with this show can die from anything other than in their sleep peacefully, or they will be a part of the curse, and that's not the way a lot of people pass away. So, like, there's gonna be another one. I hate to say it.
It's one of those things where it's, like, I think Naya's death could have fit better into the narrative that they were driving for this documentary was if this had happened while she was on the show, and it was
absolutely.
Because her body was exhausted from how much work it was having to working on this show.
Yes.
And that's like, and then she like, and it was like, she could have just, like, you know, died from exhaustion,
right,
you know, because her body just gave up. And it was like, that would have been like, oh yeah, this show's fucking cursed, because it's like, you can draw each of their deaths directly to a cause that this show had on them.
Yeah.
But, like,
that's too good,
it's
though.
More
it didn't
just
work
like,
out that way.
It's
well,
too,
I thought
it didn't work
that
out
about
that way.
Mark, I feel like they would have focused more on Mark's pedophilia if, and I'm so glad that it wasn't, but if, heaven forbid, he had victimized anyone on the show or associated with the show, they probably would have talked about it way more. He would have got, like, a whole, episode 2 would have been all him, probably.
Yeah.
But it didn't have a tie-in that was that good, so they had to kind of keep him as, like, the ominous foreshadowing that no one on the show knew about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
It's just... I get including Naya Rivera in this makes sense, but also trying to tie it to a curse, that's insane. Like,
but
it's
that's the
so,
thing, Adam, is that things kept happening after the show.
I know.
Laughed.
Like, I'm surprised there wasn't a... wasn't a fourth episode about, like, the Capitol riots or something.
They just...
Did Glee cause this?
I love it. They have one, don't let any Gleek have ever grown up to be an extreme nationalist.
I know we keep going back to Lea Michele, but, like, they're, you know, they kind of touched on it of, like, with when, like, Darren had invited, like, a few of, like, the featured background to, like, come sit with them. And it was like, ooh, somebody said that you can't sit with them. And it's like, oh, it was Lea. And it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, it's a good anecdote. But, like, there's also, like, documentation of, like, some of the cast members of color who rightfully were like, Lea Michele was super fucking racist to me. Like Samantha Ware straight up, like, called her out, like, especially because, like, you know, Lea had posted, like, a whole thing, like, supporting BLM, and Samantha Ware was like, where the fuck was this when I was on the show and you were super racist to me?
And
legitimately.
I wondered about that. Whenever he was telling that story, I was like, I wonder what kind of elitism this is even stemming from. Because before, and not that I assumed it, but it did cross my mind. Because before that, like, actor's story, I was wondering if it was a difference between this culture and Broadway culture. Because I feel like dancers are used to a certain level of horrendousness. And, like, even, I don't know, there's, like, certain places like pageant girls I have been friends with that, like, you expect a certain level of horribleness from people around you sometimes that you don't know. And I wonder if she came from Broadway and was just like, everyone is this horrible, and people in Hollywood were like, oh no, people talk shit about you if you're this mean, and she just didn't. Is that am I making this up?
Yeah. I'm making up it's a theory, possible,
but I don't know.
it's possible.
Just
but like,
to, just
I
to
mean,
be like, hey, can you get that guy? I don't want him sitting here. And just to feel super comfortable doing that is, like, kind of wild.
Yeah. I mean, Samantha Ware was properly on the show. She was a recurring character. And, like,
saying?
And her saying that, and, like, she was the one that, like, straight up called Leah out, and she's like, I don't give a shit. She's like, I got
but
nothing to lose.
Did she give specifics, or was she just like, you were never nice to me, and I 100% know this is why?
I mean, she had a couple examples. This was a couple
Ooh,
years ago, and
I'm gonna
so
go
it was
Google.
And like, I think, like, I also think that, like, a couple other, you know, actors
corroborations
also kind of, like, subtweeted her, and so like, it was like, oh, this feels like a confirmation of sorts. So I don't know. I've been saving this because when I did background on Glee, it was during season 6. It was the Burt Bacharach episode.
Sure.
And I was, it was What the World Needs Now was the title of the episode.
Yes, listeners,
and you won't find me because it was pre-transition. Good luck. and I just remember, like, waiting in the wings, and I'd done a background for a few other things before, and, you know, those days can go super long, and they're just like, and you're just sitting around, you're like, what's even happening? But the day was going by really fast, and it was like, oh, this is interesting, given that we're actually shooting a musical sequence right now, and, like, this seems to be taking a while, but, like, it's moving a lot of clip. And I mentioned something to a background actor who did background on Glee a lot, and I was like, oh, it seems to be going really fast today. And she, no joke, this is forever seared into my brain of, like, where we were, what was happening. And she said, yeah, that's because Leah's in a good mood today. And I was like, what? What?
Like,
and
that
so it was,
dictates how these days go.
Yeah. And so, like, even hearing that, I was like, okay, this is a background actor who likely has never spoken to her, but, like, has seen this as an observer.
My day is directly, like, affected by this woman's mood. And I
directly
know it.
And so it was like, it's like, yeah, you know, it's just heard that she's just notoriously difficult to work with, and that she has had these encounters with other actors, and she's treated other actors this way. And it's just like, and then that all of that behavior is reflected in how much work she's gotten after the show. Like, if you get the reputation of being difficult and you keep proving people right, like, they're not going to hire
I feel
you.
Like, that's the thing, is even because the first time and that's the thing, again, that was another moment that this documentary was so bad that it discredited something that I wanted to agree with. Because instead of going straight to that actor who had an actual, like, interaction even adjacent to her, they wait for that to kind of come in, like, 45 minutes in, possibly the second episode even, and let that catty guy who is friends with Naya, who we know she's not friends with, give all of the documentation. And it's like, who are you?
Yeah.
And so that, even though I knew, and because he used the word difficult first, I was like, oh, well, that's like the Scarlet Letter. Like, she's done. Anything you do or say about her after that in this documentary, I feel like I know where you all stand on her as a publication.
Yeah. fans also noticed it too, because when you would see all of them posting on Twitter, and, you know, and, like, posting all their photos and who they were hanging out with and who they were tagging, it was like everybody else And then, like, Leah was off on her own thing with, you know, with Corey or doing something else. Right. But it was, like, she was never with them. Right. It was always, like, the same
people,
group.
Like, decide to be around when they don't have to be around.
Yeah.
Yes. And so she never hung out with them outside. And it was, like, almost, like, everybody. And then Leah was off on her own.
Right.
So it's, like, I don't think – it's, like, that feels like a very – obvious but exclusion see, and not that, like her choosing to opt out.
But even that is such a far more honest and interesting commentary on what it was like to work with her on the show than the direction they took,
yeah.
Which is like having that one guy who should have honestly only barely spoken about Naya, and they could have just let him put his fiance story in there and been done with it. Oh, or have more people from the show, which I guess they couldn't have gotten, but like actually talk about that instead of that, the leap that they took.
Yeah.
With the hairdresser and her acting like she was like picked Corey to be her puppet or like, you know what I mean? That whole angle.
I think this documentary should have just been like, hey, you're not going to believe how fucking crazy Glee was.
Right.
Like trying to make it a true crime thing and introducing this curse angle just made it dumb. Like there's so many leaps and it's like this story is dark enough. Like
yes.
You don't have to try and make it darker for us. We get it. This show was enveloped by tragedy. We understand. Mm-hmm. Just tell the story.
Like you said, even everything with Naya, I feel like they fluff with so much speculation that you kind of have to come back mentally to a mother, to like how the child was found, to all of that, that is the actual tragedy of what happened. I kind of like came back to that at the end because you've had like, you went full Forensic Files for a second and had a guy on a boat. Like why did that need to happen?
Didn't.
That was so wild. That was so wild.
I was
wild.
So
I was like, oh.
I looked up and I was like, oh, we're doing this. Like,
yeah.
I will admit that I read a review of this, or I skimmed a review of this docuseries before I watched it. And one of them pointed out, he's like, why are we bringing Naya's father to the lake, a place where he hasn't been since she died? What is the purpose of this? Why are we doing this?
Literally,
why?
Just the shot.
Why? Why are we just re-traumatizing this man?
Well, even the
we don't need to be doing this.
Even the video of, like, he could have said what he said in his house.
Yep.
And they could have cut to the footage of him running into the lake. Heartbroken. Mission accomplished. Like, you got your freaking tragedy nut off. You did not have to, like, pay for the gas and make him drive back down there.
Yeah. Yeah, the second half of this episode just feels like grief porn, kind of.
Because there's no new information. Like, it would feel worth it if we were bringing anything to light that, like you said, Jack, apparently hadn't already been covered. Like, I felt a little bit better knowing less and thinking that this is, like, some theory that hadn't been explored to this extent.
Yeah.
And it's like knowing that this has already been addressed is even more. I'm sure the people that are the most interested in this will like it the least. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The people that want to watch this and like even look back on it in any kind of way or like hopefully get new information or a new angle or something, but at least be like, oh, I'm glad that they spoke to this person. Anything. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, as soon as I heard that they spoke to none of the original cast, I was like, oh, so this is going to be terrible.
And I kept waiting for anyone to show up. Anyone.
Anyone. They should have just made the thesis of the docuseries like this is what can happen to people if we put them in the spotlight at too young of an age and don't support them. Like, and we don't have systems in place to help them through this. Like young, but of course that could also have just been a whole fucking 13 episode series talking about like child stars.
I was about
and just
to say, like child
and
labor
the price
and
of
hours.
Fame.
Because I never thought about it till you said this, but I was wondering about how stringent they are on younger stars. Is it just that everyone was a teen, so they were like, fuck it? Because it's like when you're an actual child, they probably, or is that them doing what you mentioned earlier, where they were just paying all those fines? Because they should have been able to stop for like school and stuff even, right?
The youngest cast member of the original cast was Chris Colfer, and he was 18 when he was cast.
They did not
so
have any
they
of
were all adults. They did not have to worry about those pesky child labor laws and giving them breaks and having them stop after a certain number of hours.
Right.
Nope,
I'm just going to say it. Actors need a union. Throw my hands up. Someone make it happen.
Man,
Adam
man,
coming out
that's
with
a,
the fresh
that's...
ideas.
Adam, you should bring that to your other podcast, Unpopular Opinion.
Should I tweet that? I should tweet that.
You should tweet that.
People support
you should tweet
it.
That. Yeah, but
smart
yeah,
take on my part. I think we've hit the end of the episode. This was really good. Thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I do not recommend this documentary. I guess if people want to hate watch it, you can go do that. But
I was about to say, if you know a lot about it and you want to yell with someone, like if Jack has a friend that maybe wants to scream with them about it, no, you don't want to do that, Jack.
Oh, yeah. honestly, if you know, like if you were a Gleek, if you watched the whole show and you were like deep in the fandom, you can pass this entirely.
There was don't waste
the
your
only...
time.
Don't waste your time. The only new information to me was finding out about the crew members who died. That was the only new information to me.
Okay.
Everything else was known. Everything else was well documented, has been discussed at length. If you were a fan of this show, like, and like deep in it, you can skip this. I mean, you can watch it. If you want to watch it, you can get a free trial week to Discovery Plus through Amazon Prime. That's how I watched it. And then I canceled my subscription because fuck Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yeah.
Well, because also you could know nothing about Glee and still kind of be infuriated by this documentary.
Yeah, everyone.
That's who I was.
Everyone should be mad at this documentary except Mark Salling. Like, he kind of gets treated the best. And that's another reason.
That would
be
the best troll review is 5 stars and it just works out.
From the grave.
So again, thank you both. Do we have anything to plug before we get out of here? Katrina, how about you?
I mean, I do stand up, so you can follow me at Katrina Savad, which is just Davis backwards. It's S-I-V-A-D. There's just a bunch of Davises. but yeah, I have shows. If you live in LA, come hang out. I have a special on Prime if you want to watch that. But yeah, just follow me on all the things, and you'll easily find a link to more things that are related to me. So thanks.
Nice. Jack, how about you?
I have nothing to plug. I'm not doing anything. I'm still wearing pajama pants right now.
Me
but
too.
You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at JackLovesTV.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam Todd Brown. That's Todd with 1D. And follow my Substack, adamtoddbrown.substack.com. You can give me money to write, and I sure would appreciate if you do that. And I think that's it. Let's get out of here. Jack, say goodbye.
Bye.
Katrina, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Coco Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.